Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck a Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
Oh my God. So Morgan, I got back literally at midnight last night.
Gross.
We can get away. Gross.
That's my nightmare. I like being in bed at like 9:30.
No, I was messaging you last night from the plane. And I'm like, I cannot believe that I'm still like stuck in Vegas. It's like what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas because you can't get out of Vegas.
So who, first of all, takes kids to Vegas? Like that was your first mistake.
Well, how else are you going to teach them how to gamble?
Well, that's true. You can't shoot craps unless you're there.
That's exactly right.
Underneath every conflict, there's something else going on. If parents can work it out, that's much better for the kids.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce.
First of all, I'm home. I made it. We're alive. Everyone's fine. Mazel tov. Also, can I tell you, this is a direct segue into what I'm obsessed with this week.
I love this segment because it brings about things that we didn't even know we needed.
Things that we're literally obsessed with.
What I'm not obsessed with is, for those of you who live in Chicago, note to self, do not, and I repeat, do not fly Southwest Airlines out of O'Hare right now. It is... Hashtag not worth it. You're going to walk 47 miles to the gates because they moved them to the international terminal. It's awful. I hated everything about it. Dragging my children once we landed, like from wherever the hell, Indiana, where we landed, and then like Chicago, where our bags were, it felt like I was literally dragging them through the desert. Like it was just awful. However, my obsession. I am obsessed with the people who Southwest Airlines hires to like run their gates and be the flight attendants. I rarely fly Southwest ever. I'm just not a Southwest traveler. But every time I get on a plane, I think and I hear the person on the intercom doing like stand-up comedy.
Are you kind of jealous?
What is this? Like, what are they doing? And it's not funny. I mean, like, it's not that funny. Like, I'm just going to be real with you guys. It's not like I'm like, oh, I'm cracking up over here. But it's so appreciated
refreshing, right?
Yeah.
It's like not everyone has to be uptight at their job, but also Andrea will be leaving this podcast to become a Southwest Airlines flight attendant.
Well, that was my big announcement. You're right. Here I go, flying the friendly skies. Can you imagine if I get on and I start talking about divorce?
I would not put it past somebody on that intercom on Southwest. They have a lot to say.
And I have to say, I texted you yesterday because sitting on the plane, somebody turned around and said, are you Andrea Rappaport from How Not to Suck at Divorce? Well, yes, I am. Why the hell did you take your kids to Vegas? I'm sorry. Did you ask me if my name is Andrea Rappaport? No, it's not. You don't know me and my children were definitely not in Vegas. Turn around.
These are not my children.
They're not my children.
I don't know whose kids these are sitting next to me.
Not a clue. Not a clue. Oh my God. But speaking of kids, speaking of Southwest, that doesn't make any sense, but let's just stick with issues, sticking with feeling frustrated. We're talking today about mediating in a higher conflict situation. So everyone knows that for people who have an amicable divorce, which good for you, you mediate, right? You're like, oh yeah, we talked, we laughed, we cried, we hugged, it was over, we lived, we loved, whatever. Wonderful. But for those people who don't fall into that category, they hear the word mediation and they're like, yeah, that's not an option for me. Nope, can't do it. We don't agree on anything. We can't mediate. And we here at How Not to Suck at Divorce challenge you to think otherwise. So this episode is all about mediation and the ways that it can work for you.
All right. With that said, let's bring on Joy Rosenthal of New York City.
Okay. So the words high conflict and mediation are not frequently used in the same sentence, but apparently they can be. So today we're going to cover that very topic, high conflict mediation, with New York City family law attorney and mediator, Joy Rosenthal.
Exactly. We just covered some high conflict parenting issues on our last episode. So why not bring it into mediation? Because a lot of people talk about mediation and the legal issues that I always hear is, I want to settle it, but I just know my ex is not going to buy into it. Joy has been practicing family law in New York City for over 25 years and is also a professor at the CUNY Law School. This is going to be a really interesting and important episode for those of our listeners who are stuck in the middle of their divorce process. And one thing I want to mention about Joy is that she has a subspecialty, which is kind of unique in same-sex marriages, because we have a lot of listeners in same-sex marriages. So this could be your episode that you maybe want to tune into. Joy, thank you so much for joining us and focusing on mediation, especially high conflict mediation. Welcome to How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really thrilled to be here. And I love your show. And I love the humor and joy that you bring to it. And yet you're also very reassuring. And I really feel like you're there for the listeners. And I want to be there for the listeners with you. So thank you very much.
Aww, I love that. Thank you. That was really kind. And I want to say that I know for a fact, because I've talked to a lot of these people, that a lot of divorcing people feel like mediation is not going to work for them because their soon-to-be ex is really difficult, or they feel like their divorce is really complicated, so they don't even want to consider mediation. And then when their attorney suggests it, they feel like their attorney isn't listening to them. Right? Because they're saying like, okay, look, I just told you that my wife is insane and she's so difficult and we don't see eye to eye on anything. How the hell am I supposed to mediate with her? So what I'm wondering, Joy, is do you hear that kind of rhetoric a lot?
I would say not a lot. A lot of the people who come to me are coming because they say, you know, we want our divorce to be amicable. We think we can figure it out. But it does happen. And I say, my answer to that is, you don't have to agree on anything. You don't have to agree on what happens to the house. You don't have to agree on the kids. You don't have to agree on anything. You just have to agree to mediate and to come in good faith and try to work it out. So that gives a lot of leeway and kind of a lot of space, I think. And what I want them to know is that what I say to clients when I meet with them the first time in the like introductory session is my view of being a mediator is not that I'm some objective outside person who's going to make decisions. I'm not making decisions. They're making decisions. Mm-hmm. But what I say, and I look at each of them, it's hard to do this on a podcast, but I look at each of them and say, I want to be there for you, and I want to be there for you. And I want both of them to feel heard by me. And I want part of my job in mediating is to help them really articulate what it is that they want and need and why, and really think about why that particular thing is important, and also to be able to hear the other person, what they want and need, which when you're in the middle of a conflict, that's about the last thing that you might want to be doing.
So I have a follow-up because, Joy, one thing you just said is something that I feel like really solidifies mediation. It's not necessarily getting, in my mind, what you want. That's not really always what settles cases. It's what you said. It's feeling seen and heard. And when I have clients that feel seen and heard, whether it's in mediation or by the mediator or the whole process, you can get to a deal. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it's almost like magic. It's yes. Like Andy Warhol said that we each have 15 minutes of fame. I feel like when people are getting divorced, they just want, like, you know, they want to go in front of the judge because they want somebody to hear all the pain that they're in.
Yes.
Such a good point. That is,
okay.
I'm like nodding over here because I'm like, I've been there. Yes, you are right, Joy.
Okay, so that leads me into my next question, and I'm kind of going off topic a little bit because, Joy, you're just bringing out the joy in us tonight. So here we are. Do you meet with the clients pre-mediation before you just jump in just to feel them out and let them feel you out a little bit, or do you meet with them the first day?
I meet with them. I give them a free 30-minute session. So not everybody does that. And the other thing that's different about the way I mediate is that I only meet with the clients together. So sometimes mediators will meet with one person and then separately meet with the other person. And the way I was trained is you do everything with both people together.
So I'm sure there's been some fireworks in those meetings.
Oh yeah. One of the first times when I was just starting out in mediating, I had been working in family court for a long time. I was mediating a custody case in the courthouse, and we had a rectangular table, and the people was a man and a woman. They were sitting on the opposite sides, and I was sitting in the middle, and the man reached over the table and grabbed the woman by her collar. Oh. And the court officer came running in, and I was like, oh Lord, what did I get myself into?
You're like, this is not normal. This is not okay.
No, this was not okay. And because it was in the courthouse, the court officers were great there. They were very attentive.
Oh my gosh. Imagine if you weren't in a courthouse and there wasn't anyone with you. That's where my mind went. Like, I don't know what I would have done besides pulled my camera out to record it to post later on. But I don't know what I would learn. What would you have done in that situation?
Well, now I meet with clients on Zoom, which makes it much easier. But when I met with clients in the office, I had a paralegal who was always there. Unless I knew the clients really well already, I would never be alone with the clients
for this reason. So one of our listeners, or probably many of them, are listening right now and they're saying, see, this is exactly what I'm talking about. This is why I don't want to go to mediation. This is why, you know, I don't want to meet with my ex with Joy or any other mediator. So if you have these two parties and this is your protocol, and remember, listeners, protocol changes with mediators in every different area. My protocol is a little bit different. Joy's protocol is a little different. That's okay. All the protocols still usually lead to the road of mediation, which is positive in my mind. But my question is, let's just say this listener is like, yep, exactly. I'm going to be the one that has the fireworks with the ex on your first 30-minute Zoom. What do you do to calm everybody down? What's your MO there?
Listen, ask them what's going on for them and listen. So I just want to say a quick thing that mediation is not appropriate when there's domestic violence or when there, or when there's a threat of a use of power like that. Both people have to feel somewhat safe. And a lot of what we're, there has to be some kind of underlying trust that both people are there in good faith and both people will be honest, particularly about their finances. So it's not always appropriate. It's not appropriate in every case. But I think it's appropriate in a lot of cases. And the level of conflict isn't so much the issue. It's the abuse of power that's the issue. And that can be different. But you can have two people who are really can't see eye to eye, but they, if there's a basic understanding that they want to get through this and they want to solve it, or that the alternative to solving it is worse than them trying to work it out, then I think there's hope to working it out.
Right. Because legally, what I see is, like you said, it's not appropriate for domestic violence cases. It's not appropriate when somebody is genuinely afraid or there's a genuine threat. But if it's just anger or hurt or not being heard or felt seen, that can be worked through mediation. And that's where somebody like a Joy, who is trained in this, can really get you to start negotiating. But again, sometimes those first few meetings, especially if you're meeting with your ex or soon to be ex, can be a little bumpy, because that's the first time that you're both going to essentially vomit out your entire story and all the hurt you've, you know, felt for the last, you know, X amount of years.
Right. So I had one case where the first time I met with them, the for that 30 minutes, the wife just cried the whole time. She didn't say a word. She just sat there and tears were streaming down her face. And I kept saying, "Are you okay? Do you want to take a minute?" She was like, "No, I'm okay." She wanted to hear what I had to say. And we did the whole thing and she was just crying. Then we started, and the first meeting they came to, she screamed at her husband for 2 hours. She just had to get it out. She was absolutely furious with him. And then she calmed down and we got to work and we settled, you know, where were the kids going to be and what was the schedule going to be? And we, you know, we started getting to it. But it's not, I tell people sometimes it's not a linear path. It's
agreed. I always say, trust the process, until you don't have reason to trust it. So Joy, give us our listeners' love stories before we hop into action steps and more about the nitty gritty of mediation. Give us a mediation story to kind of kick off this episode.
I have two.
Two stories. Two for the price of one.
Two for the price of one. So one is, I was, this is a very New York City story. So you have to understand the context of this, is that getting your kid into a good kindergarten in New York City public schools is like getting your kid into Harvard. So I was mediating with this couple. She was Muslim and not white. He was Jewish and white. And they did not agree on the time of day. They could not, like, one would say the sky is blue, the other would say the sky is gray. They were both really, really smart and really actually lovely people, but they were not at their best, we'll say, when they were trying to work stuff out. So in New York, when your kid is applying to kindergarten, you have to list your top three choices. And so they agreed on their top choice, which they knew was a long shot. They didn't think their kid was going to get into. We spent a whole 2-hour session on which school was going to be their second choice for kindergarten. And it cost them so much money. And I was just like, I mean, one, his view was that he wanted the kid to go to the all-white school with the best scores. And her view was that she wanted the kid to go to another school in the same district that was much more ethnically and racially diverse, because she didn't want her kid to feel like she was standing out. She was the only one.
Yeah.
And I understood both of those positions, that they both made a lot of sense to me, but they were at each other's throats. And then finally I said to them, you know, your kid is going to be great. She's going to be absolutely fine at either school. If she goes to the white school, you're going to make sure that she has friends who are non-white, and you're going to have after-school activities and other things that she can do. That'll be fine. And if she goes to the school that doesn't have as great test scores, you can tutor her, or you'll spend time with her. You'll read to her. She's in kindergarten, right? Like, I know that you're both going to spend a lot of time with her, explaining the world to her. But what she won't be okay with is you guys fighting all the time. Because yep. Kids want everybody to get along. That's really what they want. And they both looked at me. They stopped fighting with each other for a minute. And they turned to me. And the mom said, "But Joy, that's what we do." Like, at least she had some self-awareness about it.
That is so funny. I wish I could say that I haven't had that school fight as well. It's just ridiculous. But, you know, it's a fact of life, especially in these big cities. I joke, I'm like, what are they feeding these kindergartners? Gold during their lunch? Like, what exactly are we doing here? Yeah, but I get it. I've been there and done the whole song and dance myself. So I understand the school issues for sure. For sure.
I have a question. In New York City, are mediations often assisted by the party's attorneys, or are they coming in just themselves?
That's such a good question. For me and most of my colleagues, we don't have attorneys. They come to us before they go to attorneys. So mm-hmm. I always suggest that they have a mediation-friendly reviewing attorney review the agreement before they sign it. And sometimes they'll consult with that attorney during the process because they just want to get an idea of like what the law is or what their rights are.
Yep.
Before they agree to anything. But usually we work everything out and then we file. I mean, and then they go to attorneys.
Meaning they both have to have an attorney to file in New York. Is that
they
right?
They don't have to. I don't insist on it. I insist on it if they were doing a prenup, but with divorce, if they really don't want to go to reviewing attorneys, then I don't insist that they do.
So in New York, can you file an agreement?
Yes. You mean as a mediator?
Correct.
Yes. What I do is I have them waive the conflict of interest in writing. And then I can file, one of them becomes the named plaintiff and the other, the defendant. Sometimes they toss a coin to see who's going to be which. And then I file on behalf of the plaintiff. But my conflict waiver says, you understand, I'm not actually representing you. I'm doing this just to get the agreement that you signed, reduced to a judgment of divorce.
Interesting. Well, that does explain a lot because we get a lot of questions about that. And in Illinois, we do not work that way. So just for our listeners, it all is state specific or area specific. And I understand why probably New York does that. Illinois is totally different. So just make sure you understand and get the right, information related to where you are.
That does make more sense to me hearing some of the things that you have said, Joy, about how mediation, will work and not work for certain couples with certain more like high conflict issues and why they would need to use representation. Whereas like where we live, there are lots of people who use mediation for only, how would you describe it, Morgan? It's like there's one part of the divorce that they need to go through and mediate, but that mediator is not going through everything with them. It's like, we just can't. I always come back to this example because you mentioned it once in season one of our show, Morgan, the ketchup bottles. It's like, we can't figure out who's going to get the ketchup collection. And so they would go and you go and you just use a mediator for that, right? And then everything else, it goes back to attorneys exchanging emails and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's probably similar to where Joy is. And Joy, correct me if I'm wrong, but you can mediate anything. You can mediate an issue. You can mediate the entire divorce. You can mediate the entire parenting agreement. I always say if we can do it all at once, great. But a lot of times post-divorce, things may pop up, you know, related to children or, you know, the ketchup bottles. And that's a prime issue to send to mediation.
Right. And there's something I forgot to say, which is that a couple of years ago, right around the time of COVID, I think, New York came out, the court system came out with something that said that it we call it presumptive mediation. That's not exactly how it's worded, but the concept is that any civil case that's filed in New York courts, there's a presumption that alternative dispute resolution can be used. So they started a mediation program in each of the divorce courts in New York City, and they have a panel of mediators, and they'll offer it to the parties. And at that time, they have lawyers, and the lawyers can either come or not go to the mediation.
Interesting.
So, and that would be more what you're talking about, that maybe they would use the mediator just to resolve one or two issues, and then there might still be things that need to be negotiated by the lawyers.
Right. And one of the differences in Illinois, too, is, or at least in my cases, I should say, which is a little more high end cases, we usually always come with the client to mediation, unless it's a very minimal issue that we've counseled, kind of like you were saying, Joy, we've counseled them. We feel comfortable that there's going to be no mistakes. We're on the phone if they need us. But for the most part, I would say that we like to attend because a lot of times, and I just had this issue today, people think that they can go and get a lot more done with just maybe their ex. But what they don't understand is that some, at least in Illinois, some agreements that you make that you think are harmless can affect other issues in the case that you may not have thought about. So I always caution people to make sure they know what they're agreeing to or getting into before they head into mediation. But Joy, one thing I want to get into is give some background into why you got into mediation.
Well, I was representing children in family court, so that was in neglect and abuse cases and in foster care. And I was very aware, I must have had over 1,000 clients, and I interviewed them all. So these are kids between 0 and 21. And I was very, very aware that kids are loyal to both parents, to their caretakers. And kids are very smart, and they know a lot more than they let on to about what's going on with the grownups in their lives. Mm-hmm. And they know what they want. And they know they have a really strong sense of fairness, particularly kids at certain ages. Mm-hmm. So I did that for a long time. And then I was working at Legal Aid, and I decided to learn how to do criminal cases for kids. They're called delinquency cases in New York. And those cases, which you think you hear, you know, you hear terrible things, most of them were school fights or kids like doing very, very low level crimes, like stealing a pizza delivery bike, something like that, right? And I was like, this is really stupid.
That's
like,
a crime?
That was a crime. The first case I had, the kids stole 2 pairs of Mickey Mouse underwear from Sears. You know, I was just like, why are they prosecuting this?
Poor kid.
Make any sense.
Maybe needed that underwear.
Yeah. And then I had one kid who got in a fight with this girl, and she ended up doing time. She was locked up. And I said, well, what was the fight about? And she goes, Miss Joy, that fight has been going on for so long, I don't remember what it's about. And I was like, you're doing time for something you don't even know what it's about. Like, this doesn't make any sense. I was like, these cases need to be mediated. So I got really interested in mediation. And then I was trying to figure out, when I was ready to leave Legal Aid, because I was kind of burnt out, I was trying to figure out how to make mediation something that I could do as a living, and divorce mediation was and collaborative law were right there in front of me. And they had a really robust custody and visitation mediation program in the family court at that point. So I started doing it a lot. I just did as many cases as they would give me, and I really got training that way. And the thing that I really like about mediation is that I feel like it honors, even though I'm not working directly with the kids, which I miss, but I feel like it honors what the kids were telling me, that if parents can work it out, that's much better for the kids. I think that we all know that, right? In this field.
Yep.
But and it's so hard. So it gives the, it also gives the parents sort of a model for how to work on problems together, to how to do problem solving together.
That's interesting. That's an interesting approach to made me think like, oh, we always talk about how we are the role models for these kids. And we always talk about this in terms of don't stay in an unhealthy marriage because you don't want to show your children that that's what life should look like, right? And you, we also going back to what you said before about how smart children are and how they pick up on more than they're letting on to. But you can also use all of that to for positive effect and show children that even though mom and dad don't see eye to eye on all these different things, we can still come together and work something out so that we are putting you, our children, first and coming to a resolution. And something that Morgan and I always talk about when we're talking about the importance of keeping your mind open to mediation, that if you don't do this for people who are more high conflict and you don't try to work things out with a mediator, then you're basically throwing everything up to a judge and saying, okay, hey, third party whom we've never met, whom you may or may not care at all about me, how about you make these decisions? Hope you're having a good day today. Hope you're not in a cranky ass mood and decide to, you know, take that out on me. So I think that's great. I want to make sure that we get to some action steps because our listeners listen to this show to get some guidance. So with that in mind, and the fact that the show is called How Not to Suck at Divorce, because as I love to remind everybody, I totally sucked at getting divorced. What are three things that someone can do to help reframe their mindset so that they are more open to mediating? For those people who are like, nah, no, I don't know. What can they do? How can we help these people just open their freaking mind so we can help them resolve these issues, save a ton of money, a ton of time, and be more hands-on with their case?
I love the sound effects.
You know, I specialize in those. So thank you.
Well, these are really mindset shifts.
Okay.
So the first is, and this concept comes from Donna Hicks, who's a professor at Harvard, who's done a lot of work on dignity, is the difference between dignity and respect. So respect is about actions. Respect has to be earned. You can totally not respect anything about your ex.
Okay.
But dignity is the inherent value and worth that everybody has as a human being. Even the person who you think is a slimy piece of doo-doo.
Garbage.
Garbage.
Yep. Right? Got it. Okay.
But they're a human being. So there's something in there that has value. And the reason why this is important is because you don't have to respect them, but you are going to have to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
They are still your child's other parent, or they are still somebody that you invested enough of your life with that now you have to figure out how to separate.
Right. Yep.
And so I think just that, just recognizing that there's a difference between respect and dignity is really huge, because if you treat somebody like they're a person, then that will reduce the conflict. That goes back to what we were saying in the beginning.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is that you don't have to respect somebody, but everybody deserves decency or human dignity. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And when, you know, when, you know, I always say people aren't at their best when they're divorced, right? If you're screaming at somebody, let's say you're on the street and you're screaming into your phone, the people around you are going to be looking at you, not at the person you're talking to on the phone, right?
Yep.
So it hurts you.
Right. We just heard last episode, you can't have a fight with yourself. Right.
I think we go through all the time.
Okay. So let's
talk about that.
Right. Let's talk about step one. What's your step one on how to, you know, get through high conflict mediation? We've already talked about reframing in general, but what's step one?
Oh, I thought that was step one.
I think step one, Morgan, is to recognize the difference between respect and dignity. I think her step is focus on having that the dignity that your soon to be ex has. Don't get respect out of your mind.
Okay. Aretha, that's fair.
Is all about respect.
Aretha.
You don't have to be about it.
Okay. That's fair. I like that step. I just thought maybe that was an overall theme, but I love that that's step one. So basically everyone deserves dignity.
Okay. All right. So now step two. What do we have?
Step two that goes along with it is to think of the problem as outside of either of you. Really, when we're in conflict, my mediation teacher, Gary Friedman, talks about the conflict trap. It's really easy to get caught in a conflict trap where you feel like you have to respond to absolutely everything and everything, like they do something, so you react. You do something and they react, and you're constantly reacting to each other.
Right.
And so step two is just take a break.
Hmm.
Take a respite. Take a vacation from the conflict. Like, who are you when you are not in that conflict? And, you know, I know you've had Bill Eddy on the show. He'll talk about the fact that, like, when you're responding to somebody, ask yourself first, do I need to respond to this?
Mm-hmm. Right.
What happens if I just don't answer? You know, they're texting you 400 times and you're just like, I'm not going to honor this with an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And to realize that you can do that and that the conflict does take over sometimes, but, you know, like just sort of give yourself a break.
I like that.
Really easy to get burnt out.
I like it. Okay. And what about this final step?
The final step would be to get as much information as you can and to figure out, really spend some time thinking about why you want what you say you want.
Ooh. Why?
Because there might be other ways to get it. And that's sort of the key to mediation. So
because I want it is not the appropriate answer.
Well, it might be.
Why do you want it? Because I do. I get that a lot. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so, like, let's say there's a conflict about, like, they both need the kid on Friday night. Well, why is it important for you to have the kids on Friday night? Well, because Friday night is my bowling night. Well, let's say Saturday night is my bowling night. I want to be with the kids one weekend night, and it can't be Saturday, so it has to be Friday. Mm-hmm. And why does the other parent want the kids Friday night?
Because the other parent does.
Right. Or because it's Shabbos dinner, and it's really important to me that we have these traditions, and I want to make sure that we're together as a family for Shabbos.
Right.
And then you're trying to figure out, well, is there a way for you to go bowling and for me to have Shabbos, and maybe it's not really about Friday night, because if you underneath every conflict is something else going on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe the thing is, well, you're a jerk and I don't want you to have what you want. That sometimes is there. But if you can get what you want, one of my mediation teachers once said, if you can get what you want and your ex can get what they want, would that be okay with you?
Yeah.
That was a wild question, because a lot of times the answer is no.
And then it's funny, the old song, you can't always get what you want.
Right.
But it's funny you were saying that, because a lot of people, you know, when they're negotiating in mediation, when you're getting down to the bottom as to why they want something or what their goals are, and then what they come back with doesn't align with what they want, and you call them on it, that's when a lot of times they cave, because they're like, oh yeah, because what I've just asked for is unreasonable. And then they decide that that isn't in line with they want, with what they want. So it's kind of a circular argument at times that I see.
Yeah. And I wonder, do you ever see cases where they have a proposed settlement, they reject it for whatever reason, they end up litigating for a really long time, and then right before maybe they're going to go to trial, they end up with the same settlement or one that's worse for them?
Yeah.
That they could have come to 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's the unfortunate part about some of those cases. Some people just have to duke it out for a while before everyone gets tired and throws up their hands. A lot of people are smart and say, that is not me. I do not want to do that. Godspeed to everybody else. I want to save my money. And if that's you, we love it. We love it. Because a good law firm and a good attorney doesn't need your case going to litigation.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that like the truth? I mean, if you've got a great lawyer and a great law firm, your case is not going to break their firm or make their firm. And they get business because you're happy and you send out their name. It's not because I duked it out till the end.
Exactly. Exactly. That's so smart. And, you know, that's what I say. Whose kids do you want to send to college? Yours or mine? You know, I mean, right? Divorce is so expensive.
It is. And it's funny because this is the kind of stuff that's so hard for me to relate to, because I sucked at divorce because I don't know how to fight. I don't have that in me. I'm the type to roll over and say, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. I hate conflict. I'm terrified of it. So when I hear that people go round and round and round and round, I understand from hearing enough of this and doing this show and hearing how, you know, we're all wired differently. So we're all going to handle this process as monumental as a divorce differently. But it's so interesting to see how our different personality types play a role into how we would mediate, how we, you know, go through all this stuff. One of the things that I found so frustrating is the part of a divorce that's like a chess game, where you can't just come out and say, this is what's most important to me. I'd mm-hmm. like to talk about this.
Right. It's, let's just get to the like bottom line right away.
Yes. And that makes me insane when people are like, no, you hold on to that. You hold on to that. You mm-hmm. might need it later. I'm like, oh my God, for fuck's sake. But I don't care about any of this other stuff. So it is really interesting hearing what you guys just spoke about, because my brain just doesn't go there. But I know that, again, it's also hard because so much of a divorce is a business move, and you have to have that logical side of your brain. And I don't have that side.
Well, thanks for admitting that, because I bet a lot of our listeners are like, I don't have that side either. But Joy, I wanted to ask you before we recap on your three steps, because at the beginning we said that, you know, you're pretty focused, or you have a focus on same-sex marriages and mediating same-sex marriages. And we haven't really focused on that topic, although I have a lot of same-sex couples. That's definitely, I wouldn't say my main focus in my practice. So I want to know, if there's a same-sex couple that's listening, is there anything different that people need to know or think about with those types of couples going through mediation?
Well, one thing in New York, if it's two women or one woman and the other's non-binary, I always ask them, have you done a second parent adoption? It's so mm-hmm. important for the non-biological parent to establish a legal relationship with the children. Because they have a legal relationship with each other, the parents, does not mean, you know, because they're married, does not mean that it establishes a legal relationship between the non-biological parent and the child. So there's considerations like that. There's other things that have to do with making sure that the child will be raised in a way that is open and friendly to both parents and to both parents' families. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. I'm mediating now with a couple where one is female and biological parent, the other is non-binary. And I was going to tell you a story about them, but it doesn't have anything to do with this.
Well,
appreciate any kind of nuggets you can give us, because if there's anything to consider, you know, we want those listeners to feel heard too.
And actually, before I forget, I do want to ask a question about that adoption thing you mentioned. Is that something that is just in the state of New York, or is that something that goes anywhere in the states people need to be aware, or are parental laws different state to state in that type of relationship?
They are different state to state, but it's even more important in other states. New York is pretty liberal when it comes to that, and we now have something called the judgment of parentage that you can get, but I still recommend that people do the adoption, because an adoption is something that's recognized from state to state. So if you do an adoption in New York, then it'll be recognized in Alabama. I mean, just think about any kind of adoption. Yeah. You know that when you adopt a child, that will be recognized all over the world.
Right.
Yep.
And so far, I think that's available in every state. I'm not sure. I don't know that.
There's definitely some intricate issues with same-sex marriages. And one thing that you have to consider as well, which also is, you know, with heterosexual relationships as well, but if there's frozen embryos or any type of things at a bank, those need to be taken into consideration. So, Andrea, I mean, at some point we may need to do a full episode on these types of issues.
Great.
And there also might be issues with the donor. Like what is the relationship with the donor? And is the donor going to have, if it's a known donor, is the donor going to have any relationship with the children later on? And if so, what does that look like? What do they want it to look like? So all of that comes up, but there certainly can be issues about how they're going to raise the child. And I find that particularly with same-sex couples, they've kind of lived outside of the law for so long often that they can come up with much more creative solutions, which may make it more difficult to express in a way that will comply with the law, that will fit in with this little framework that they have.
Interesting.
Separation agreement, like what they want to do is maybe very different from
what legally you can do.
What legally you can do, yeah.
Interesting. Well, we appreciate you at least touching on those types of topics for us. But Andrea, can we recap her three main points here?
Okay, so step one, in my own words here, it's going to be, let's recognize the difference between respect and dignity. You don't have to have respect for your soon-to-be ex, but you need to treat them with dignity. They are a human being, unless proven otherwise in a court of law. Just kidding. They're humans. Okay. That last part was just for me. Step two, you got it. You have to take a break. And you also need to view these issues that you're settling as something that is outside of you and your ex. Did I say that correctly? And you didn't say this, Joy, but something that I thought of when you did mention this is, if you can think of these issues as issues that don't necessarily stem from you and your ex, you can almost look at them as like we need to solve this together. Like it's not something that you did, he did, she did, they did, whatever. It's okay, we got to figure out the matter of the ketchup bottles. Let's figure this out. But if you're going crazy, take a break. Last step is think about why you want what you say you want.
That's good.
Now, what I want to make sure we mention before we run out of time here, because I feel my children are about to bust in the room any minute now to start yelling at me for something. So buckle up for that. Is, Joy, you have a course that you offer to help people kind of muddle their way through this process. Tell everybody a little bit about that course and where they can get access to that.
Great. Thank you. So the course is called Landing on Your Feet, A Compassionate Lawyer's Guide to Divorce. And it is an online course that people can take whenever they want. They don't, you know, you listen to the videos, or it's a private podcast also. And it goes through how to set yourself up, how to fill out the forms that you need to fill out, how to organize yourself, the different process options, like the difference between mediation and collaborative law and litigation, and when they might each be appropriate. And then the four areas that need to be sorted out. So that's dividing up the property, particularly the house, whether there's any spousal support or alimony, child support, and coming up with a parenting plan. And then I'm developing a separate module on negotiation. And it's available on my website, which is joyrosenthal.com. And then if you go there and you see Learn with Joy, you'll see a link to it. And the reason I developed it really is to help people make the best use of working with their lawyers, and to be able to go in asking the lawyer questions that will really get them to what they want, where they want to go.
Yeah.
And it helps them with all of these mindset things, but also just like being prepared. So by the time they go to a lawyer, they know what their assets and their debts are. They know what their budget is. They know, have an idea of what their parenting plan could be. They're well organized, and they're ready to start really getting down to work.
Which is helpful because people need that frame of mind to go into this. You know, this is people are sort of thrown into the eye of the storm, right? When they start this divorce process, and so to help people do this better is such a great offer. So, and I will make sure that the links to everything that you just mentioned are in the show notes. So people, don't feel like you need to pull over your car to write this down. We've got you. Also, friends, please feel free to reach out to Joy to ask her questions about anything that she can help you with. You practice in which county? Just New York City, correct?
New York City, but everything's on Zoom, so I can work with anybody in New York State.
Well,
and the course, just to make it clear, is for anybody. It's legal information, not legal advice. So it's for anybody in the country.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay.
I love it.
Friend, listeners, if you are in the state of New York and you think that Joy might be able to help you with your divorce, please feel free to reach out to her. And Joy, here it comes. It was an absolute joy to have you on our show. I was waiting the whole time.
Agreed. Agreed. Thank you so much.
It was a joy to be here.
Okay, so that was pretty interesting, that topic. And I agree with what she said about the fact that it doesn't hurt anyone to give mediation a try, even in the high conflict cases. And you know what I liked? I liked her talking about that there's something different. Respect is different than dignity, and everyone deserves dignity, right? And felt like right what she was talking about.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we always talk about like being the bigger person, but this is a different way of reframing your mind. You don't have to have respect for them. Don't put that pressure on yourself. Just treat them with dignity and realize that you're there to solve a problem.
Yeah, exactly. But speaking of respect, I want you to respect me right now because I got a piece of fan mail this week. Yes, I did.
What?
I know. We always joke that no one approaches me. Everyone sends you all the crazy messages, but I get a few once in a while, and I got one this week. So I'm going to talk about it.
Okay, let's see which Nigerian prince DM'd us today.
If you're really a prince, I'll marry you.
This is fan mail.
Give it to me, girl.
And it was a long one. It was long. I woke up in the morning. It was like a few pages. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Who is this?
I thought this was going somewhere different when you said it was long and it woke me up in the morning, but keep going.
You know, when you wake up in the morning, you look over at your email, you're like, how bad is today going to be? I got a really long one. And it was so I'm pretty proud of my fan mail, but let me just give you the gist of what this question was. It was a good one too. Very kind person, been married many, many years. And basically this person thought that the divorce was going to be amicable and it's kind of turning out not to be amicable. And it was about money. So basically this person has a small inheritance where they get a little bit of income from their inheritance per month. And their income is probably a little less than their spouse's income monthly. And they've been married again a long, long time. And the concern that this person had was that
their ex, of course, was asking for what we call maintenance in Illinois, which most people know as alimony, the house, and for this person to pay all the attorney's fees. So basically the sun, the stars, and the moon is what they were asking for. And this person was freaked out and wondering, could this possibly happen? Like, do I need to brace myself for this happening? Like, what's my worst case? So first of all, you're not alone. Second of all, I said right away, you know, I can only tell you about Illinois law. So the best thing to do is, I know you're scared about the answer, but the best thing to do is, knowledge is power. You should contact your lawyer. But here's what would happen in Illinois if you were here. And what I basically said is, the reality of the story is that this person is not going to be a maintenance candidate under Illinois law. And they're asking for the sun, the moon, and the stars, probably just to stress you out, because no judge is going to give them the sun, the moon, and the stars and all your money. And it was as simple as that. And the person wrote back and thanked me and said that they're going to contact their lawyer. But ultimately, they felt so much better just about the answer. And sometimes it's just about giving the answer. So with that said, I'm asking you to respect me and my inbox for my one piece of fan mail this week.
Girl, I'm giving up all the respect, not only for your fan mail, but the sound advice that you gave that person. And sometimes advice is not always what we want to hear, right? But, you know, you got to give it to people straight, and they're going to respect you and appreciate you, and you are helping them. So good for you, girl. Good for you. And anything else that happens to you in the morning, at night, whenever, that's long and hard and makes you, stops you in your tracks, I want to make sure you tell me about it. I'll tell you about all my late night flights from Vegas on Southwest Airlines, which, by the way, in case I need to mention it again, don't fly out of O'Hare. Southwest, hit me up. We'll talk. But yeah, let's do this. And friends, if you are feeling like you've also been stuck at O'Hare in the middle of the night, by the way, I had to wait over 30 minutes for my bags. Not a fan. But friends, if you are also feeling like you are in the trenches with me at baggage claim, I want you to know you're going to get through this. The feeling that you are feeling right now is not your forever. I know that is so hard to believe. And I know you're listening to us thinking, bullshit, you don't know. We do know. We know. I have been through this. Morgan talks to people who are in your exact position multiple times a day. But guess what? Her clients are not lifelong clients. Even the hardest cases end up getting resolved one day. You just have to get in there.
And even though it's hard, and maybe you think like just staying where you're at in basically hell may be easier, just know that there is light on the other side. And I just had coffee with a client that was my client about 4 years ago. Very tough case. It was a woman at this time. She was really riled up at the end of the case. We got it settled. I met her a few days ago. And she said, you know, you told me my life would be really fabulous in 5 years. And she's like, and look at me now. She is so happy, back on her feet. It's just a totally different human. And you will be there too. It just takes a lot of stamina to get through this. And what we say is, divorce is a marathon. Some days it's day by day. Other days it's hour by hour. And some days you just don't even want to deal with the day. And that's okay. That's okay.
But we're here for you. We're here for you on those really bad days. And we're here for you on those good days too. You know, it's like your wedding vows. For richer or poorer, in sickness and in health, we are here. We are here for you. This show is here for a reason. We want to support you. We want to guide you. We want to give you the insight that you deserve, because ultimately we want to help you not suck at getting divorced.
And if you love our show, please go and rate and review us. We would appreciate any of that. And remember this, you've got this and we've got you.